Hey everyone, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about the Eufy Video Lock. It's a smart lock that's really easy to set up with just a Phillips screwdriver and no extra drilling. It's got a keyless entry, so you don't need to worry about fumbling with the keys when your hands are full. Also, you don't need to worry about handing out extra keys when you're in a pinch, your kids losing them, or people copying the key and passing it around to each other. Something else I like about the Eufy Video Lock is that it has a camera built in and it works as a doorbell as well. Personally, I think the Eufy Video Lock is great for apartments or cottages where you can't necessarily add extra holes for a video doorbell. My favorite part about it, though, is that there isn't a monthly fee and your recordings are locally stored, so you don't have to worry about someone else owning your doorbell data. You can find it on Amazon, or if you want to know more, search Eufy Video Lock, that's E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hello and welcome to the Home Business Podcast. My name's Phil. Joining me as usual, I've got Rohan. Happy New Year, Rohan.
Happy New Year.
How are you, man? How was the Christmas break?
Oh, can't complain. It's been, just pretty family-filled and just kind of busy, you know?
Nice.
All that usual stuff, but yeah, how about you?
Exactly the same. Busy, moving around everywhere, family stuff. You know, Home Assistant doesn't stop working by the looks of it. Still got another release, so first release of the year.
That's right.
Here we go. So as usual, this episode of the Home Assistant Podcast is sponsored by Home Assistant Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Assistant instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the Home Assistant and the ESP Home projects. Configuration is done via the user interface, so no fiddling with router settings, SSL certificates, or any YAML. So yeah, Rohan, 2024 is here. We had Frank on our last episode for the 2023.12 release, which was a great episode. And, you know, we had Frank's talking about his 2024 wishlist items. We actually had some cool responses on YouTube as well, some of those things, which I thought we could have a little discussion about too. So first one we had was Tracy. Wrote, I would like to see the UI to be organic and fluid and pleasing to build for in excess or dashboards. Artificial intelligence is okay, but to do large homes requires a major expense and the UI we already have in place. That's what other home automation platforms such as Samsung did, but they were cloud-based and that's what was the curse to their platforms. So I guess Tracy here is sort of mentioning that we could use AI to build out dashboards and make them look nice. I don't know about you, what your thoughts are here, Rohan. What's your gut feeling here?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I necessarily see it being AI-based for that kind of thing, but I think it would be pretty cool. Like, I actually don't mind the dashboards as is. I actually saw a couple of really slick ones the other day on that are just posted. People posted in Facebook.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't think it's ineffective as in its current state. Could it be more organic and fluid? And sure, I think there's always that room for improvement, right?
I think it comes down to like AI can sort of you think of those like Midjourney images, right? Like how big prompts have to be to create like a nice, realistic image, right? And sure, like we can get some way there with, you know, an automated, nice looking dashboard, but I think because, you know, everyone has such unique tastes, whatever we create or whatever a system could generate for us, I don't think will ever be perfect. And I think, and that's also home business problem from being able to do so much customizations as well. Mm-hmm. You know, people want to tweak stuff. So I don't know, if we could ever have a home automation system where you just fire in all your entities and the system tells you this is the dashboard or generates you a nice enough looking dashboard that, you know, everyone would be wowed at. I think there would always be a tweak to be made or something just wouldn't look perfect.
Well, I think it's also everybody has their own preferences, right? Like they're like, I might love something, which might, you might just hate. Right. Yep. So
now give me the ability to say, you know, type into assist, create me a dashboard with a two column layout with, you know, my alarm control panel at the top and person entities and write it that way. That would be cool. That would save a lot of YAML time. Right. But yeah, who knows? Maybe that'll be on the cards in the future, right? Like this stuff's advancing pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be kind of cool. All right. Brian says, update Node-RED to the 3.0 release.
Do you still use Node-RED? Like,
I do. I honestly couldn't tell you what my Node-RED version is, though. It's definitely not something I've looked at.
Yeah, sure. I'm surprised that, like, if there is it is 3 or it is?
It's 3.1.3, apparently.
Okay, so maybe it is supported.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But yeah, interesting that maybe there's just not support for.
I don't know. I guess it's because I just do it all in, it's all in one Docker Compose file, right? So I just pull it and then recreate my containers, and which is like one command. And I just know anytime I update it, the whole stack gets updated. So I don't bother with what version is it, blah, 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 whatever.
It's right? It's there. Yeah. It's ready to go.
Yeah.
Eric wrote in and said that I think it would be awesome if we had something in Home Assistant similar to GPT, so we can ask it to create an automation using the entities and devices that we have within given parameters, and we do not have to figure out the most efficient way to code the automation. Say what you want and then tweak it to get the exact automation that you want, or even modify it on the fly if there is a situation that you did not think about. So this is cool. And I guess this is just alluding to what I was just saying with the dashboards, right? Very, very similar. I actually have been using GitHub Copilot to do, I did try and get it to do like some Home Assistant automations because, you know, Home Assistant open source project. So Copilot would have access to, you know, how that all works. It was a bit hit and miss. There was some, you know, it tried to call some services that don't exist or, you know, deprecated services.
Interesting. Okay.
I've also got like Copilot in Visual Studio Code will prompt you if, you know, entities. Even though I've got the Home Assistant extension installed, it was still, it was guessing what some of my entity names would be, you know, like, which were close. I was like, oh yeah, it could be that. So, you know, I'll just accept it. But no, it turns out that entity just didn't exist. So yeah, it's certainly, I think it's not far away. And maybe if, Eric, if you haven't got GitHub Copilot, maybe, sign up for a free trial and try it out. Just, I think they've just released the, chat feature where you can, it's out of beta now. You can actually chat to Copilot like you would ChatGPT and actually ask it to create you a YAML automation package or YAML automation and see what it comes up with.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, again, Phil, to your point, like it's not, AI is there, but it's not there yet, if that makes sense. Like it's there's still a lot of room for errors in AI, in GPT style large language models, right? Like, but yeah, I mean, I think, is it cool? And you know, have I used it for stuff? Absolutely, right? Like, it's not, but yeah, there's still that, like, you gotta take it with a grain of salt kind of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I was, so just over the Christmas break, I got sick and I need to take some tablets, you know, 3 times a day, right? And I was traveling. Yeah, I was like, I'm going to forget to do this, right? Time zones are going to be throwing me out of whack. So I actually went onto Copilot and I said, I need a home assistant package that will have an input number that increments, you know, tracks, you know, how many tablets I've taken today. It will send me a message to my Telegram saying, you know, it's time to take a tablet. And it will reset at 11 p.m. every day. Copilot, to its credit, it did it. It gave me the whole package file.
Amazing.
It gave me the automations. It named them. I then just had to go in and tweak it a little bit. So I had to go in, put in the right, you know, notification service to send it to my Telegram. I then wanted to add things like when a message comes through to my Telegram, I can have a keyboard come up and I can just, you know, mark it as taken. That would then send a webhook back to Home Assistant and then increment the counter that way. So I did that manually. Everything worked fine. There was a couple of errors with it. I think, as I said before, Copilot used a deprecated value to say, I think it was using input select set value or something, and it gave me the code. The code was valid YAML, but the way it was calling that service wasn't working. As soon as I pushed it into Home Assistant, the automation was immediately errored out and said, no, this is an invalid automation. So
interesting.
We're very close, even with Copilot, right? But I was really amazed. It saved me like, you know, like 90% of the time having to set up the structure of the package.
Again, right. it is still pretty cool what it can do, right? And then, it's just, again, it's not perfect. It's not 100% every time is the point. Tony on YouTube was saying, as a person building out an HA system, my big wish for 2024 would be improvements in documentation. There are lots of parts in the core product, especially services, that could use worked examples on the online docs. One example of a service that's underdocumented is mediaplayer.playmedia, which sends the media to an entity, example to play audio on a smart speaker. The deficiency here has led to a lot of threads of people asking, well, how do I make a content ID and stuff like that? Ideally, for specifying local files or directories, you should be able to bring up something like the open dialog in a regular OS when setting up the automation that plays the media. But equivalents for common remote methods like SMB shares and stuff need explaining. So maybe like collapsible sections so that you don't disturb the flow of the page. It's not a bad, I think it's also one of those things where there's like a lot of core services and stuff like that, that again, just hasn't gotten love in a while. So just, they don't necessarily update the corresponding documentation page. I don't know about when the last time Media Player, I think last year we did talk about some improvements or they changed the Media Player play media specifically, if I remember correctly. Year before maybe, I don't know, I can't keep track anymore. But
this is like one of the core things, right? You want to be able to play music from Home Assistant and getting the right service call, like depending on, you know, are you using Sonos, are you using Chromecast, you know, Spotify, like they're all got their little tweaks, right? I think a lot of them now starting to be standardized. A lot of media components that you can just send a Spotify URL to if you're using Spotify, and it will know, okay, this is a Spotify URL, I need to send it to Sonos in this way. But in terms of the UI side of things, this is what the media player, the media library area in Home Assistant is trying to tackle. The idea being that, you know, you've got, I think there's a radio station's custom component or component that you can activate in Home Assistant, which will then add radio stations to Home Assistant in there. If you've got any local iTunes servers or Plex media servers or anything like that integrated into Home Assistant, that can also show in this media library area. Also local files as well. So if you've uploaded, you know, in custom text-to-speech or anything like that that's in the Home Assistant directory, that should also appear as a local file that can be played to. You can then use the Home Assistant UI to select the file, select the media player that's linked in Home Assistant and push it through there. Maybe what's missing is a way for users to extract the service call that Home Assistant is calculating underneath to then create that as an automation, right? So I could go in to the UI, select, you know, play this radio station on this speaker. How do I then make that into an automation? Maybe that's something that we would need to see.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, pretty much anybody can go in and update the docs. I think you just need to do a PR and then update it that way.
Yeah. This has always been a problem with open source, right? Especially when it's developer focused, you know, documentation's generally last, right? Let's just build the feature and move on and document it later.
Yeah. They're pretty good at documenting it as they build it and stuff like that too. Mm. I will say that. It's just, again, I think it's that going back and
deep is not. All right. So 2024.1 is here. I think it's a sort of a mini, you know, people were on, you know, December wind down. Not a huge release, but still some pretty good goodies in here. But I think the biggest change we're going to see moving forward now is a new onboarding flow for automations. So if you are using Home Assistant or you've for the first time, or you've just installed a fresh copy of Home Assistant and you go into the automation screen, previously it would just be presented with, you know, a list of no automations. So it would just be like, there are no automations here. Zero automations. Starting with Home Assistant 2024.1, it's now going to give you sort of an onboarding guide. So they've got an automation robot will explain what automations are in Home Assistant and also point you to the documentation. So it will tell you, hey, this is what an automation is. You know, it will allow you to trigger things based on time, you know, when an action occurs. And then it'll point you to the documentation and say, want to read more? Go here. So this is great for new users just starting out and seeing, wanting to get to know terminology, what does this mean, and all that sort of stuff too.
Yeah, and there's also a downside in this, right? So which is, you know, the second part of what we're going to talk about, which is some of the tweaks that happen in the automation editor. So the editors arrange into like a kind of when and then if, then do kind of areas, right? So when this happens and if X happens, then do this. So it makes it a lot easier to how to make an automation, which I completely agree with. And then when you click on and like you add a new trigger, it'll bring up a dialogue and you can choose what kind of automation it is. And then there's nice descriptions to explain what you're actually adding. So before, when you went to go add something, it would be like, what's an example? Like, we were talking about media player just now. So media player dot play media, right? And the description would be media player dot play media, which really tells you nothing. Whereas here it'll be like, oh, you know, this service will play songs from whatever that looks like, right? So it gives a little nicer descriptions and stuff like that. And then conditions and actions have a new button when they're called add a building block. And this is typically blocks of logical elements. So ands, ors, ifs, chooses, those kind of functions. And then before they used to be mixed in with conditions and stuff like that, but now they have their own little button, which just makes it easier to find it. Cause again, when you're looking for that kind of thing, you start there at that, again, building block as the name suggests, right? So it's a core element of it. And then you do that, and then it kind of declutters that list of conditions and actions. Now, I said there's a bit of a downside a little earlier, and that downside is that also means that if you're following YouTube videos and stuff like that on that a lot of our creators, the curator community has made, that also means that, you know, there's going to be some, it's going to look this way in their videos for a little bit until they get the chance to update it, if they have the ability to update it, like if they're able to do it. So you're going to have to do a bit of a diff, kind of, okay, this looks like this in the old UI, this is how it's going to look in the new UI, right? So not the biggest deal there, but it is something to keep in mind. So when you update it, yours might look a little different if you're trying to follow a guide on YouTube from another creator that's built this.
I will say I do really like the new flow of the automation UI. Like I do most of my automations in YAML, but you know, sometimes if I want to quickly create an automation and get it live, you know, I might do it on my phone in the automation editor. And the just before, like, so if a lot of Z-Wave devices, And I would go in previously and you would go in, select a Z-Wave device, right? Like, let's choose my bedroom downlights. And for whatever reason, I don't know what it is, but there is just so many Z-Wave specific services attached to any device, right? So it's set value of node 0 on this device, set value of node 1 on this device, right? Complete rubbish, right? I would have to scroll through a list and then go to find this service call, which is turn the light off, right? Which is what I wanted.
Yeah.
Now the flow is, you know, select the device, bedroom downlights, and now it goes, okay, this is a light entity. I'm going to suggest to you turn off a light, turn on a light, toggle the light, change its brightness. They are, you know, all I need to do with that device. I don't need to know about, you know, setting, if I do want to set, you know, a node property value or something like that, I can do that too. I just, I'm not really going to do that 99% of the time, right? So this whole new flow of, you know, select the device you want to do. Now I'll give you the most common options at the top. And you, there's also device specific things here is so much nicer that way.
And again, it's still filterable. It's still like, you can still type in complete and like that kind of thing. Right. So it's that part's nice.
All right. Not a huge one to really say much about, but descriptions and due dates are now available for to-do list items. I think we touched on it in our last discussion with Frank, but they're there. They're available now. So yeah, to-do items now have descriptions and due dates.
And the fun thing with descriptions that I don't think they actually talk about in the release notes is you can actually add Markdown to them.
Ooh, so nice.
Yeah, you can have, and on the creator call, they were playing around with, they're doing like, oh, I wonder if we can have headers in here, and then did like # and then put a header in, and yep, you can, right? And I think there's a limitation of 3 lines, I think, that it displays before you have to click in. Mm-hmm. And then when you click into it and open the dialog box, that'll give you the raw form, not the formatted. Mm-hmm.
Not the Markdown
method,
still
pretty neat.
Yeah, that's very neat.
There's a new entity type of a valve, and so if you have valves for like water, gas, air valves, like pneumatics, anything like that, there's a new entity type you can use for that. So when it's created by an integration, there's a few services that can respond. So valve.open, valve.close, or toggle, which is obviously, if it's open, it'll close it. If it's closed, it'll open it. And then if there is a valve that allows a specific position, then you can actually pick that too. So that can be controlled as well using valve.setPosition or valve.stop. So, nice. Yeah.
I wonder if the like climate devices, you know, I think there's heat valves or you know, like some radiators that have valves on them. I wonder if people slowly start you know, updating those if they support for it. Be cool.
Yeah. I don't think there's a ton of entities today that use it. Just it literally came out today.
Yeah.
So it's people need to update their entities for it, stuff like that. So you might still see it as switches or covers, whatever that is, right?
Yeah. All right. The thermostat and humidifier cards can now swap the current or target temperature or humidity being displayed on their respective cards. So this is just in the standard Home Assistant card. So you can choose if you want the primary information to be the temperature or if you want it to be the target temperature or humidity or current humidity. There's a little toggle in that UI now. That's it, just a little swap. But apparently it was a popular request, so.
Yeah. And then another one of those popular requests was the fan modes being on cards. So if on like thermostat and climate cards, it adds the buttons to the cards to set the fan mode of the device directly on that card. So.
And if you're using update entities in Home Assistant to track firmware, there's now a card that you can add. To Home Assistant, I think it's a part of the core entity card, And you can now add actions to those update entities where supported, so that you can then click a button on the card and have Home Assistant update the firmware on the device. And it will also show you what the status is of that device. So if you're using like an ESP device and it says, hey, there's a new firmware for this device, you can click update. Home Assistant will show you, okay, I'm updating the firmware on this device. And when it's done, it'll give you feedback all right there on the Home Assistant dashboard. So no excuse that it's too hard to update firmware now on devices.
That's right. Sleep IQ foot warmers apparently exist.
Well, so Sleep IQ exists, like the integration exists. Now we have foot warmers.
Foot warmers. I know. It's. I was like, okay, cool.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe this is like a Northern Hemisphere thing, but like foot warmers, like what is like? I don't know. It just feels like a very first world thing, right? Like here we have
smart IoT device as a whole is like a very first world.
True. Maybe I'm on the wrong podcast for that discussion. Yeah. But you know, here we've got a Sleep IQ mattress that can control your foot warmer and Home Assistant. Like this is, I don't know. I'm usually the guy that's like, yes, I need that device right now. But this is the one where I go, ooh, maybe this is too far. Maybe this is where I tap out foot warmers too much.
You know, it's kind of handy, I guess. It's still warmth and comfort related, right? So I'll take it.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I did look at the price of this and the mattress topper alone. So they've got like smart mattresses or a smart bed, and then you can just buy a topper to go on your existing mattress. The topper alone just for half a queen size was like $900.
I don't
know if that supports, you know, this Sleep IQ integration. I don't know if it supports a foot warmer or if that's a add-on.
Incidentally, when you type in Sleep IQ foot warmer into Brave Search, the third thing I got was Sleep Number recalls foot warmers sold with Sleep Number 360 beds from 2017. So hopefully it's fixed, but I don't know. Not the best first impression there, but sure. Yeah.
It's a cloud polling device too, so it requires a cloud. So I'm not going to spend $900 on a foot warmer that could be killed by the cloud at any moment.
Yeah, agreed.
But someone clearly has, and they're going to get nice. You know, they'll be able to set the temperature of how hot they want their feet in winter, and for how long they want to have their feet warmed. All
nice toasty feet.
Yeah, that's it.
That's right. And I guess I'll do the last one too. France gets support for picnic groceries.
Let's be here.
Enjoy. Yep,
things still expanding. Very jealous.
I know, right?
All right. New integrations landing in this release. So AO Smith and OSO Energy, you can now integrate their energy water heaters with Home Assistant.
Yeah. Blue Current. So if you have Blue Current EV chargers, you can now monitor those.
DROP or DROP, it seems to be all capitalized. So you can manage your smart water system with Home Assistant. So it includes supports for leak detectors, changing the hardness of your water with integral water shutoff, triggering a water protection valve, and salt sensors as well. Now, this integration is interesting because it uses MQTT. So that means it's all locally controlled. Don't need the cloud. You just need to configure the system to connect to your local MQTT broker. And then the device.
Yeah, I was actually, when we were going through this on the creator call, I was actually like Googling it as they were saying. And I was like, okay, let me check it, whatever.
Yeah,
And I guess they make like water softeners and stuff like that, right? Which I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. But then I was like, oh, that's neat. If they're telling us like they're exposing salt sensors and stuff like that, because I like growing up in our like the house that like I grew up in, we had a water softener, and I remember having to just lift and drag and pour in like 20 kilo bags of salt all the time into the softener, right? But it's like we'd also just buy it. We'd be at Costco and we'd be like, oh, do we need it? We don't know. Like, let's just buy like 2 bags, right? Like just in case, and leave it in the basement and that kind of thing. And it's like, okay, did we need it? Oh, it was actually full already, like, but whatever. So it's nice that you can kind of see see that. I'm glad that I don't have to do that now, and we don't have a water softener. I do like a water softener, but it's not something I want to do. But that's still pretty cool. Holiday. So you can add holiday calendars to Home Assistant for powering automation. So for example, on like public holidays, hey, don't open the blinds, or don't open it at a certain time, maybe, right? Your usual times, sleep in a little bit, that kind of thing.
So interesting here. I actually have a feeling, because Home Assistant has had the Workday sensor for quite some time. Yeah. And the Workday sensor, you set your region and it would know based on your region if it's a public holiday or not on that day.
Yeah.
So I assume that it's using the same sort of library here, and now you can just expose the same data as a calendar entity instead of the Workday sensor.
So it's going to be regionalized by country, and if and where possible, it'll be regionalized down to a state level or a provincial level.
Yep.
As well. It's just whatever that integration brings into it, or whatever that Python extension or whatever it is they're using that allows it to do. It'll give you some level of specificity there.
Frank's been a little bit busy. He's now added support for Tailwind, which allows you to operate your garage door openers connected to a Tailwind smart garage door controller. So there you go. That's now available.
Yeah. And if you're not familiar with that, that's another thing that's come out of this whole MyQ crap, is let's call it, which there was RatGDO.
Yep.
Which is Rage Against a Garage Door Opener, which is a project. I still love that name. Which is kind of a project that you can go in and purchase the board and download ESP Home firmware and push it onto that board and operate your Chamberlain, or I forgot the other brand, but whatever. They're MyQ based garage doors.
Yep.
And then Tailwind is basically a commercial offering of something similar. So
nice.
TESI. So you can integrate, monitor, and control your Tesla vehicle connected to the TESI platform.
Rohan, you have a Tesla. Can you explain to me what TESI is, or what? Because I think there is already a Tesla integration with Home Assistant, or an unofficial one by a bank or something.
So that's exactly what it is, right? So there is. So there's multiple ways of getting information to it. So TESI is a platform that is, it's more meant for like fleet management and stuff like that, right? So if it is a paid platform, I looked it up, I hadn't actually heard of it until I looked it up a few days ago. But it's a paid platform, but it basically gives you their API, and they, I guess, somehow go back and scrape Tesla, whatever they do. I don't know what they do, but
yeah, right. So this could be
like managed that way.
So this could be an official way to get data from for your Tesla car that's not going to potentially break if, you know, those custom components
stop working. I don't know how official it is, but yeah, okay. It's official-ish, right? They are managing and supporting and so on and so forth, that API.
Nice.
And then again, there's Tesla Main. There's a couple other ways to get it in there too. So
yeah, cool. All right. Vogel's motion mount. You can now control the position of your Vogel's motion mount TV mount. It provides information about the current position of the mount, and it allows setting a new position.
Yeah. Why would you stand up to move to tilt your TV when it can tilt for you?
It's basically, so I don't even know if it's tilting, to be honest. Maybe it is, but I looked at their demo video and yeah, essentially it's like it pushes the TV forward from the wall or back. It's, I think it was about 4,000 euro. €4,000 for the mount itself. So it's probably, the mount's probably cost more than the TV. And on their website, they say it works great for Control 4 systems. I think there was another one, Lutron or Cassetta or something like that. But now Home Assistant has it. So it's not just the big name home automation brands that can control this mount. But yeah, if you need to have your TV come a couple of meters closer to you, then now it can do it automatically.
Yeah, I guess for
like, yeah,
what did you say, 4,000?
4,000 euros, yeah. And I guess if you, you know, got a TV that, you know, maybe the room configuration is it needs to be on a corner, it spins out from.
I'm looking at one here and it's like 800 euros, which is not bad. No, sorry, it's still pretty bad, but it's better than 4,000. Yeah.
But is it kind of integrate with Home Assistant? That's the question.
It says there's an app. So I assume yes. Look, if there's an app, then it must be Wi-Fi based or something of some kind, or Bluetooth based, or I don't know. I'm investing way too much time into a thing I'm not going to buy. all right, let's talk about some breaking changes. Reolink. So the Reolink infrared lights in night mode entity has been migrated from the light domain to the switch domain. So that means that the entity IDs have changed and automations and dashboards will need to get updated to use that that new entity ID. If you want to go back to the light domain, use the switch as X show as option on the infrared lights in night mode switch entity and select light. I just love that the entity is called infrared lights in night mode.
Yes.
Not just IR lights or night mode or something like that. It's just the most specific name.
I guess it's very, you can't get confused with what it does, right? So if you want infrared lights in night mode, you switch that switch on, essentially.
That's right. That's right. Not light anymore. It's now a switch.
For Shelly devices, the minimum supported firmware version for Generation 1 devices has now increased to 1.11.0, which was released in 2021, July 15th. And the minimum supported version for Generation 2 devices is 1.0, which was released on August the 3rd of 2023. You must update your devices to the firmware versions listed above or newer to have compatibility with Home Assistant moving forward. I think, I don't know, like, as long as Shelly keeps updating the firmware, like, Shelly is a pretty decent brand. I do, worry about, you know, Home Assistant saying, oh, you've got to use this firmware version moving forward. Like, I get, you know, breaking changes and stuff.
But yeah.
For critical devices like light switches and stuff, it's...
Yeah, I get that. I think, I don't know. It's as long as it's not an always thing, it's fine.
Yeah. And hopefully you can do the update via Home Assistant.
Right.
As opposed to having to go around and flash your light switches or whatever controllers you've got around the place. As long as it can all do it from Wi-Fi, then.
Agreed. Pretty simple. I don't actually have any Shelly devices, do you?
No, I've always been, I don't know, like, because in Australia, right, we have such high electricity requirement, like, you can't just put anything in the wall, right? It's got to get certified. And I know, like, when Shelly first came out, it was sort of iffy, like, have they got compliance? Are they just rebadged Chinese knockoffs? You know, are we going to burn our houses down if we put these in the wall? I think they're now, like, certified. I know there's proper bricks and mortars smart home stores now that are selling them in Australia. So I think they've got the official CTIC devices, CTIC approval now. For me, it was the sticking point was their Wi-Fi. And I just, I try to avoid Wi-Fi devices for my automations, just decrease my attack vectors as much as possible on the Wi-Fi network. And
fair enough.
I've gone through that a million times on this podcast and don't want to bore people with that too much.
Yeah. No, that's all good. You know, I just realized we haven't changed our Breaking Changes name. Remember that?
I'm not changing it. I'm sorry, Frank. I'm not. I know Frank's changed it to
backward incompatible. Compatible.
No, it's a breaking. No, it can be Breaking Changes.
That's so funny.
Literally breaking news. Although nothing in this release sort of has been given the 6 month update warning. So that's good.
That's right. All right. But technically, the Shelly is backward incompatible, though.
So. It will be. That's interesting. Actually, I wonder if the it hasn't been mentioned in the release notes, but it would be interesting to see if there is a 6-month grace period on this, or if you just upgrade to 2024.1 now, will those devices stop working?
Yeah, but even for the, like, just looking at the, like, for Gen 1 especially, like,
yep,
that firmware release is from 2021, right? So
yes,
it's probably a good thing you update it at some point. I mean, I don't know if they've had any security patches that they updated or anything like that. I haven't looked at release notes or anything for Shelly, but
yep,
if there is, it probably should update it anyways. So,
did you, Ryan, did you see last month there was the new feature that got added in, which was the ability to have nice pictures on your login screen? Did you see Home Assistant had to revert that? Some people raised.
I did see that.
A security concern. I would have liked Home Assistant to change that to like a toggle option, you know, maybe turn it off, but still enable it, you know, if people want to have it on. Home Assistant has added an update for their iOS apps as well. So WatchOS, there's a new companion app for iOS, so WatchOS has also got updated. But as part of that, they're also dropping support this year, I believe, for some versions of iOS as well. I think it was iOS 12, 13, and 14 potentially.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so as of 2024.1 of the companion app, they will stop supporting those versions of iOS.
Even 14, eh? That's not like that old.
Yeah. So Home Assistant says that less than 1% of users, according to App Store Analytics, which is people that have given permission to share permission with Nebuchadnezzar about, you know, their what version they're running, use those versions of iOS. And of course, supporting them makes the code base hard to maintain and blocks, you know, new features and being rolled out to the app. So there you go. But there was a caveat that this does not mean that your iOS 12, 13, or 14 devices have become unusable. You can still access your Home Assistant using the browser if you have a device that can't update past iOS 12, such as a 2014 iPhone 6 or iPad mini 3. All other devices currently capable of running iOS 13 or 14 can be updated to iOS 15 or higher and use the new versions of the iOS companion app. So,
yeah,
I guess, yeah, this is, I know a lot of people use iPads as their tablets on the wall. And the good thing, like the selling point of a companion app is that it can expose other devices, entities, right? You know, you can access, potentially access the camera as an entity.
Yeah.
You can access, you know, GPS location. Is it
screen
away?
Can you do
away?
The camera on iOS though? I haven't tried it.
I know you can do it with fully kiosk as a browser mode or as part of fully kiosk core, but I don't, potentially with iOS maybe. I mean, if it's a core app, it might be able to do it. As long as you grant it permission. But yeah, like there's a whole other like sensors that you could get access to. Which you can't access from the browser. Right? So that would be sad to lose. So, yeah, I guess now it comes down to a point of, you know, how often do you need to replace your iPad on the wall as your home control
panel? Yeah. And look, I get it from a development side too, right? It's like a lot of times you can't take advantage of newer features because it's, you've got older ones holding you back kind of thing. So
yeah.
I get both sides of it.
Yeah, I guess as long as the app could be, usable, right? It would be nice to see like an old version of the companion app still compatible with like a legacy version of the API. Like I don't want, it would suck to be in a position where you get stuck not being able to update Home Assistant because your tablet's not going to be able to work.
Sure.
Yeah. But unfortunately, yeah, there's no real easy answer to that. And I think as a home automation ecosystem in general, like that's something we also have to solve, right? Like how do we reuse as much technology as we can that's already been created, right? Like how many devices as smart home enthusiasts we have like in the drawer somewhere not being rolled out. Like I don't know about you, Rohan, but I've got a whole bunch of gadgets that I bought on sale or AliExpress Black Friday deals or whatever that I just haven't pushed out yet, right? So
I've done zero home automation shopping, which makes me really sad, but at the same time it's like gotta save dollars for other things, right? It's
that's it, cost of living crisis, man. Like it's
I know currently it's I think I need a new doorbell. I've got my, like my Ring is just, it struggles in the winters, I find. So like some, to the point where sometimes, I think I mentioned this before, but last year when I went on vacation in December 2022, luckily our neighbors were gracious enough to just pick up our packages for us and stuff like that. If Amazon came or somebody came and dropped off a package. And there's one where our neighbor had come and picked it up, but Ring didn't capture any of that. So all I saw was I saw one frame where the package was there and then the next frame where it disappeared. And there was like a minute and a half gap in the middle. And I was like, what happened? Right. So luckily I have a camera above my garage. So I saw my neighbor walk up and grab it and whatever. And I was like, okay, it's just her. It's great. That's perfectly fine, but you know, it was a little unsettling when you're in the other side of the world and can't do anything about it. So but it's one of those things, right? So and then I've been playing with Scripted and using that and stuff. It's pretty good, but it's just a whole, like, I was just like, forget it, I'm not paying for Ring. Because why am I going to pay the membership fee when it doesn't do what it's supposed to do to start with, right? So I'm going to change doorbells, stuff like that. But it's like,
because that's right. Like we've just done, like it's New Year, right? So I'm looking at, you know, evaluating all our subscriptions, you know, and Ring is like, I'm paying, what is it, like $50 a year or something for just, you know, 30 days of cloud recording or whatever it gets me. And it's $50 per device, right? And like I've only got the one doorbell, but you know, I think the price of you know, things like the Realink doorbell, if, like, would it pay for itself in 4 years, right? Just on Ring subscription fees.
Oh, 100%, 100%, right? And I think that's the one I'm leaning towards as well. And I know I've seen quite a few videos on like comparing doorbells and stuff like that. And even I actually asked the creators in the last call, I'm like, all right, guys, I think I'm done with my Ring.
Yep.
What's everyone using? And pretty much every single person was like, yeah, we're using a Realink. And I was like, all right, yeah, cool.
Done. Yeah. What would you do? Something like power over Ethernet and get it wired in that way?
No, I'm just going to do the Wi-Fi one. I don't want to care to run PoE, and especially just because the way that area of the house is structured, it's like it goes into literally just a wooden frame where there's no box, there's no anything, it's not actually like a solid place to have wiring there.
Yep.
So I'd rather it just be on Wi-Fi and just feed it my doorbell transformer bells, wires, and then go from there. So I might do that. And it's got the 2K has 2.4 and 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi. So I'm probably just going to use that. Except they don't have any in stock. So that's always fun.
Oh, I just love that. Would you use that? So you've got the Wi-Fi, I'm guessing. Is it going to be powered or battery operated?
Powered, ideally.
Nice. So then would you use it via Scripted to then have it as a external camera as well, like on, like constantly streaming?
I think Home Assistant, I haven't played with the Home Assistant integration or even looked into it. I think it natively might do that, because I think there's an ability for it to do RTSP, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think like Scripted handles like converting... streams or whatever.
If I wanted to do it on like HomeKit secure video or anything like that, I might. But yeah. I don't know if I care to do that at this point. I don't really use HomeKit a ton, so might be more effort than it's worth. Honestly, at the end of the day, if I can get, hey, somebody's at your door, ding dong, and like,
yep,
be able to actually not pay a monthly fee to 100%. See my video, then I'm good with that.
Yeah, I think down those subscriptions.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that's it. I think that's our episode.
That's it. Yeah, Happy New Year, everyone, and we'll see you guys in the next one.
Happy New Year. Cheers.
Cheers.
If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's HASSpodcast.io.
The Home Assistant Podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on haspodcast.io.